WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joe is absolutely correct because I just put the latest Monday Night Talk podcast from last week. That is up. That is available. And I am available on Twitter. Actually, my next guest knows that because she actually tweeted about being on the program. Now, we have an intern. James, the intern, is here. James, you have the list of folks who are going to be on. So, who is our first guest?
The first guest for tonight is State Auditor Suzanne Bump.
Very good. You did that nice.
Oh, yeah,
did it with style. You have to keep practicing it.
That's right.
He is correct. We do have our good friend, the State Auditor Suzanne Bump, joining us. Auditor, how are you doing?
I am fine, thanks. I've got to say, you are a brave man, even trying one of those horrible-sounding cookies.
I like adventure every now and then. I did it for a simple...
I've never been a Marshmallow Peeps fan. I have to admit that. Yeah, so you wouldn't have found me eating one of those cookies anyway.
Well, it wasn't necessarily the... I didn't buy them because I wanted to eat them, but we have done here at the radio station in the past couple of years... We have done peep dioramas. That's where you build things out of marshmallow peeps. And we did that last year. We actually competed at the Duxbury Free Library. We actually submitted something. I think it was Charlotte's Web, where we constructed the farm animals out of marshmallow peeps.
And it will probably last for eons, far into the future. I think those things are really indestructible. Another reason not to eat them. I don't think we digest them very well.
No, I think you are absolutely correct. Again, the idea was I was going to use them if we end up entering into another marshmallow peep contest. I was thinking that seeing that they were constructed out of marshmallow peeps, we could somehow use them for a reason. The shape. So, but I thought I would try, you know, I did spend a few dollars on them, Auditor, so I thought, why not see if they have any flavor? And I was wrong. You are absolutely correct. Without even trying them, you gotta have an acquired taste for them.
Well, enough people like them so that they are quite popular at this time of year, so. I'm not a fan of all things marshmallow anyway.
Okay. And as you said, they're not good for your health. And that's funny because it's a great segue into us talking a little bit about some of the stuff that your office has been working on. And one of the things, the latest press release from your office actually talks about an audit that was done of the MassHealth payment system. Now, the audit, I guess, found more than $17.6 million in deficiencies. If you could... where does a program like MassHealth rank among those that operate right here in the Commonwealth?
Well, I don't know that we have a ranking like that. Well, in terms of its size, it's the largest program in state government. It takes up 40% of our $40 billion budget.
Right.
Obviously, the federal government cost shares that with us, but still, it's an enormous program. There are more people... that are participating in it than ever before because of its expansion under the Affordable Care Act. It now covers folks with higher level incomes than it did before, out of recognition of the fact that it's hard for many people to find affordable care insurance policies in the private market. But we have an audit unit because it is so big,
right.
Because it is so complex. We have a group of auditors who are continuously conducting audits of different aspects of the program. And so, and every year we provide a report on the previous year's activity to the Massachusetts legislature, the House and the Senate, because, mm-hmm. of course, they're very interested in what we find, both stemming from concerns about program integrity, that is, are we making sure the agency is operating with proper protections against fraud and against waste, and then they're interested in the dollar values of what we are finding and what the agency might be able to do in the wake of our audits to cut down on some of their expenses. And so this year's report, they set the time frame forward, so it was from last March until this past March. We found that there were there was a healthy, although frankly lower amount than we had put out in our last annual report. Mm. But it was still almost $18 million worth of so-called improper payments. And a lot of that is to providers, that is, dentists and doctors and therapists and providers of durable medical equipment who are overbilling. They're not providing the proper services. They are providing services when they aren't required or they are contrary to the rules that parameters around how many times you can x-ray somebody or treat somebody. So we find that there are lots of ways that that these medical providers can game our system and get money that is not really owed to them.
Now, is it true that the audit also revealed that MassHealth may not have acted upon previous recommendations your office put forth about 5 years ago?
Yeah, we are a little frustrated. So in addition to the problems that we have with the provider fraud or for provider questionable payments, we also see that the agency has some problems in fixing the systems that we see are broken, that are allowing too many of these payments to be made. And so a few years ago, we had looked at the cost of urine drug screenings. So that is, somebody submits a urine sample, and this is obviously very common in addiction recovery programs, that someone submits a urine sample on a fairly regular basis, and it gets screened for the presence of a number of drugs, everything from pot to opiates and, you know, everything in between. And we saw that the agency was paying for screenings when they weren't medically necessary. It doesn't make good medical sense, and it doesn't make good sense from a dollars and cents point of view to do a drug screening every day or even every other day. And yet we saw that MassHealth was paying for claims that were of screens that were being done that often. We found that in an effort to boost their Medicaid reimbursements, that some of the testing companies were billing for each drug that they were testing within a urine screening. And so that was a loophole that needed to get fixed. We found that they were paying for urine screenings that were to detect the presence of alcohol, and you can't detect the presence of alcohol in someone's urine sample. So, you know, I this is not great dinner type conversation,
right?
But the reality, so we found all of these all of these instances of Medicaid really wasting public dollars, and we advised them to fix the system. And for a short time, they really did, and the spending greatly reduced. But now we have found over time that the expenses are creeping back up, and so we're conducting another audit to say, okay, you know, well, what happened here? Did you not take us seriously? Did you not make any effort to fix this? Or did you try to fix it and find that you were unsuccessful because now the testing companies have found ways to get around your regulations? But either way, it's important that we find out what's going on at the agency, because with more and more people participating in the program and program costs going up, and concerns on the part of the legislature and the governor about how we're going to continue to pay for this very necessary care. Mm. We've got to figure out how to control costs as well.
That is a big deal. Is it as simple a solution of what the policies and procedures and training as they're conducted by MassHealth when it comes to these areas? Is it that simple, or is it more than that?
Well, it's much more than that, really, because claims handling in the Medicaid system, just like claims handling, you know, bill paying, and in the health, you know, private sector health insurance area, is automated. Everything gets run through computer system, and there's a diagnosis code, and there's a procedure code, and there are rules that these computer systems are supposed to follow in determining what is properly payable and what is not. And so, really, it's largely a question of reprogramming these computer systems, and obviously keeping your policies up to date so that providers know what's expected of them and what's beyond the bounds. And so it's not a matter so much of human error as in a bureaucracy seemingly not being able to get its computer systems programmed properly to kick these bills out when they seem to be improper.
Okay, we're speaking with Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. She is our guest here on Monday Night Talk. I want to kind of go back to what, you know, earlier on you had touched upon it. I mean, the Medicaid Audit Unit, since its inception nearly 10 years ago, has done some great work. What would you say, I don't know if you would have a number in front of you, but how much have they been able to save taxpayers, or at least some of the numbers that they've been able to locate to find the issues and be able to offer recommendations on a regular basis, on an annual basis?
Well, I can't go back 10 years because I've only been in office for 6 years.
Yeah,
and
right.
In the 6 years, though, that I've been in office, it is close to $1 billion.
Wow.
And as I say, it's a combination of outright provider fraud that may run from a few thousand dollars up to one company that's being prosecuted now by the Attorney General that got $18 million worth of transportation payments. He claimed she was transporting people in wheelchairs when we found that 95% of the people that he was transporting to medical appointments were not in wheelchairs. They were completely ambulatory. They were getting in and out of the vehicles themselves. It also includes things like this drug screening audit, and the largest audit had to do with how well they were managing their managed care organizations that are supposed to help them provide better coordinated care and keep down costs. It's a problem that we see not just that confronts public entities, governments, but in the private sector too. We are increasingly reliant upon computer technology for all kinds of activities, and it is expensive and it is time consuming to get these things updated and to keep current with technology, and I really do appreciate that, but the amounts of money that get lost because we haven't kept current with our technology and our regulatory systems is far greater than the cost of fixing these things. So, and that's our message to the legislature. We're now going to be working, of course, if the Speaker of the House and the Senate President and members of the legislature are really interested. Now that we can do much more sophisticated analysis, they're interested in how to make sure that agencies do follow up,
right,
including MassHealth, do follow up on that audit, on things like that audit that you just mentioned. They want to know why the agency hasn't fixed things as well. And so we're working with them to see about increasing the requirements for the MassHealth program to report to the legislature on why they aren't getting these things done, and hopefully that will, you know, that will help them focus some attention there and get the governor's attention as well. The governor has this tremendous expertise as a healthcare insurance executive, and we really need him to focus that that attention and those skills on the MassHealth program.
You mentioned the legislature just a moment ago. Talk to me about having an opportunity to testify before the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and talk about, you know, putting forth, you know, your budget request and talking about how important it is that your department, your office, stays modernized so you can provide the best government services when it comes to doing audits like you just did, like your office just did on MassHealth.
Yeah, really, the investment that the legislature makes in our office, and the budget for my office runs about $18 million, and we're looking this year just to add five more auditors to the staff of 120 or so auditors. The return on that investment is huge. And one of the other areas that I pointed out to the legislature where we'd really like to focus some of our attention and the skills of some new people that we want to bring in is in the area of cybersecurity.
Mm.
State government, as we were just talking about the MassHealth program, imagine how much information state government collects just in the Medicaid program about individuals, obviously their identities and their social security numbers and their dates of birth and all of their medical records. All of that is in there. Other agencies are collecting information. Think of what the Registry of Motor Vehicles collects on you. You apply for hunting licenses and fishing licenses and gun licenses. And then there are the computer technologies that operate our highway system and our MBTA. So there are huge computer systems. And we are seeing so much in the private sector and to some extent at the federal government level, we are seeing that information is being hacked, the computer systems are being hacked into, and people's personal information is going off to who knows where,
right,
for who knows what purposes, and we know that there's a lot of identity theft that is going on. There are few police departments right here in this state who have had their computer systems hacked into, and they've had to pay ransom in order to get their systems unlocked. So someone will hack in and freeze the computer system and demand payment of money in order to unlock it and allow the police department to operate again. So we have started work, and we'd like to expand our work in cybersecurity to make sure that agencies have the proper physical protections, procedural protections, and technological protections, so that the personal data of taxpayers and of businesses and of people who receive government services is kept safe. So that's a very important area for us to be auditing, and we've been able to attract some very skilled people, and we're looking to folks within our system of academia. There are some real experts within the UMass system that we are reaching out to and talking to about to make sure that, you know, we're going about this in the right way, to see if we are thinking of every possible thing that could go wrong, and looking for the expertise of folks who are even more sophisticated than we to make sure that information is being protected.
How did you feel that the Ways and Means folks met your budget request and heard some of your concerns? Did you feel that they were listening?
I think that they're really interested. The Senate in particular has indicated that cybersecurity is a priority.
It's a big deal
for them. I'm not frankly sure what form that's going to take. I think they may still be looking for ideas as to how they're going to approach the issue of cybersecurity. But there was a great deal of receptivity. I find uniformly, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter, uniformly the work that my office is doing is appreciated by members of the legislature, and we're giving them new policy ideas, and we're helping them make some better choices about where to save money and where to spend money.
We want to thank you for joining us, Auditor. Anything you would like to say in closing, whether it's to the folks who are listening, or maybe an Easter greeting or something like that you'd like to share with those who are listening here on the South Shore?
Well, it's just wonderful to talk to you all. I appreciate the opportunity that you provide, Kevin. I'm glad that we all had such a safe and happy St. Patrick's Day. Now we do have the Easter and Passover season upon us, and I just wish everyone well on the South Shore. We live in a wonderful Commonwealth, and the best way to progress is by working together.
This year, State Auditor Suzanne Bump, she has been our guest, and we thank you, and we look forward to the next time we have you on, Auditor.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
You
always
got it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, what we're going to do now is we are going to step aside, and when we come back, our next guest is poised. He is ready. We'll speak with the one and only Eric Haskell, who's running for selectman in the town of Hingham. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Pete, a business really has changed. Back in the old days, you literally stood in your father's shoes and walked in his footsteps, father and sons, keeping the family in the family business.
It's still that way today at Tiny and Sons Glass.
How is that?
Tiny taught us well. You've got to get to know the customers. People come in for glass service, we recognize them, and they know us.
Oh, that's got to be good.
People want to know who you are. That's right.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, that was a great segment we had with the auditor, and we continue on with the great guest here on Monday Night Talk, and we'll turn to James the intern. James, your calling card, I guess, this week is just basically to announce our guest. So, who's next up on the docket?
Next up is the Hingham Selectman, or candidate for Hingham Selectman, Eric Haskell.
Say that again.
Yeah. Candidate for the Hingham Selectman is Eric Haskell.
All right, that was good. Did he do okay, Eric?
He did great.
All right, give me that back.
Thanks, James.
No problem.
And thank you, Kevin, for having me in here. It's really great to be here.
Well, again, as I mentioned when we opened the program, I try to do my best to kind of sprinkle it around. There are many communities that we serve that are in our listening area that I try to. I can't get everybody on. It's virtually impossible. But I reach out to people. If somebody is quick enough, like yourself, to get back to me and go, yes, yes, I'll be on, well, then I fill that void for the weekend, and we try to build around it, so to speak.
I have to say, when I saw Kevin Tocci in my inbox last week, it made my day right on top of that.
Excellent. For those who do not know you, give us a little bit of a bio on yourself as to who you are, if you want to mention any offices you've been appointed for, that you've run previously for, or that you've held, this would be the time for you to do so.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. My family goes back quite a ways on the South Shore. My parents are both from Weymouth. My father was in the insurance industry, moved to Connecticut when I was young. That's where I grew up, but you know, I went off to school from there, and when I finished school and everything, took a job in Boston, came down to the South Shore, and that's when I first landed in Hingham. I was looking for a community that I could settle down in, put down roots, a good place to raise a family, and that's what brought me to Hingham. I'm married. My wife Annie and I, we've been married for not quite 6 years now. Annie works for the Boston Symphony Orchestra. She raises money for them, which,
wow.
let me tell you, it's a great job, because the people she rubs elbows with at the Boston Symphony is right out of the society page. I mean, she'll be on stage working with folks like Julian Edelman. We met Shaquille O'Neal a couple years ago when he was there visiting at the Symphony, not to mention the maestro and the musicians there. So she really enjoys it at the Boston Symphony.
Oh.
Myself, my day job, I'm what's called an assistant attorney general. I work for the attorney general in Boston. I'm a prosecutor.
Okay.
My background actually is in a different type of law. I did private corporate litigation for quite a while at one of the big firms in Boston, a place called Foley Hoag, and you know, I enjoyed it. I got a ton out of it. Great people there, but public service was something that was really important to me. It was a direction that I always knew that I wanted to go in, and that's what brought me to work for the state as a prosecutor.
Okay, why the Board of Selectmen? Why do you want to be someone who oversees town government?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, we moved to Hingham because it was a community where you could get involved and put down roots and really get get to know the community and get the community to get to know us. Doing that for the past couple of years, I've been on what's called the town's advisory committee. Other towns have the same thing called a finance committee. It deals with the town budget and kind of sets the table for town meeting every year. Takes a look at all the items that are on the agenda, everything that's coming up on the warrant, makes a recommendation, goes in front of town meeting, and really gives a great overview of what's going on in the town government. And for me, running for selectman is the natural next step from that. Everything that I've learned about the town government in those 3 years on our advisory committee, things that I see that the town is doing great, and there are a lot of things that Hingham's doing really great, and some things that I might do a bit different.
What do you feel are some of the key issues in town, something that you would like to tackle?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are really three big things that I'm running on. The first is to focus the town on long-term planning. Hingham is, you know, for reasons that I won't go into the weeds right now, but Hingham's kind of at a really good place right now to take a deep breath, take a step back, and make a plan for what we want the community to look like 20 years from now. And that's something that I'd like to lead the charge on as a member of the Board of Selectmen, to put that plan together, define what we want our community to look like, what we want our roads, our schools, how we want those to serve our citizens in Hingham, and to execute on that plan. That's one thing. The second thing really has to do with the town budget and using our town resources in a way that's responsible and smart. You know, from my time on the advisory committee, I've gotten really familiar with Hingham's budget. It's about $106, $107 million budget at this point. And I believe we can make that budget a bit more efficient and continue to deliver the same great services that the folks in Hingham have gotten used to without the need for a Proposition 2.5 override.
Nobody likes that.
Nobody likes that. And I certainly don't like it either, Kevin.
If I could ask you.
Certainly.
And before I let you continue on with your point, do you feel that Prop 2.5 has outlived its usefulness? I mean, can we still pay our bills with what Proposition 2.5 allots a community annually? Because you turn around, you look, everywhere you look, you know, you've got schools that are clamoring for more money, that they're not getting enough in their annual assessments to be able to keep the class sizes small, be able to provide a quality education. And then you have folks on the municipal side going, listen, we need to be able to provide essential services like police and fire. And you come into town hall, you want to make sure that somebody's there who's going to be efficient enough to take care of your taxes or anything you may need when you go to town hall.
Yeah, it's a great it's a great question, Kevin. And I believe that Proposition 2.5 is a valuable tool, and it's something that I think continues to be useful and helpful for citizens. It's true that what Proposition 2.5 does is limits the growth of a town budget, so it can't go up too far, too fast, all at once. I know a lot of folks in Hingham and other communities have gotten accustomed to that gradual rate of growth that Proposition 2.5 encourages. And I think to do something drastic like a Prop 2.5 override or to kind of get away from the Prop 2.5 model, frankly, would do a lot of harm to a lot of folks. You know, people who have been in town for a long time have gotten used to that tax burden. It would be unfair to them to raise it drastically right out of the blue. You're right, though, that that Proposition 2.5 does put a limit on what the town can spend. I think the solution is to go in, take a hard look at the budget, be efficient, be smart about it. And that's what Hingham's been doing for quite a while now. Hingham delivers first-rate municipal services. It's very, very rare that we have a Prop 2.5 override in Hingham, and my goal is to keep it that way.
We're speaking with Eric Haskell. He is running for selectman in the great town of Hingham. And I guess probably the one thing I have to openly ask you, and that is, one of the things that you have on your push card here is transparency, that you want to practice transparent decision making. Do you see examples, whether it's on the local, the state, or federal level, that make you want to make sure the folks know that you want to be somebody who will, any decision you come to, that you'll be forthcoming?
I do. And that is the third key reason that I'm running, is to practice transparent decision-making at Town Hall in Hingham. What I mean when I say transparent decision-making is really setting a culture and setting a tone that welcomes everybody into the conversation. And if people don't show up for the conversation, my practice on the advisory committee has been to pick up the phone and call them. Many times, if we have, say, a project going in on a street, I'll pick up the phone and call the folks who are going to be affected by that and say, hey, did you know this was coming down the pike? Please tell me how you feel about it. Because what's really important to me, and part of what I mean by transparency, is to make decisions for the whole town based on as much information as possible. I want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to be heard. I want to make sure I understand everybody's point of view. And I want to make sure that the decisions that I'm going to be making as a selectman are based on the most complete information available, so that everybody has the opportunity to participate.
Just as a reminder, Hingham holds their town meeting when, and when do they hold their town elections?
Thanks, Kevin. Hingham's town meeting is Monday, April 24th, at 7 o'clock at the high school. There's going to be a lot of really interesting issues at town meeting this year, and I hope everybody can be there. 7 o'clock, high school, April 24th. And then the town election is the following Saturday. It's Saturday, April 29th. Polls are open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I encourage everybody to get out there and vote.
Now, this has been one small way for you to promote your campaign. What are some of the other things that you're doing to get out there to campaign? And what are you hearing from folks that you walk up to and you're like, hey, I'm running for selectman? What are they telling you their concerns are?
Kevin, we are staying so busy, meeting so many people, and the response has been extremely encouraging. I have to say, I think we have something on the calendar literally every day between now and the election, except for Easter Sunday. I'm taking Easter Sunday off, having my in-laws over. We're going to make some lamb, go to church. That's going to be a day off.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, but I'm doing door-to-door on the weekend and going to meet folks at their homes, which has been really great to have those one-on-one conversations on people's doorsteps and hear what's on their minds. On weekday evenings, we're doing a series of neighborhood-based coffees and events. I've asked supporters of mine in various neighborhoods in different parts of Hingham to invite their neighbors to come and meet me. We have a lot of great conversations through those, too. I think we have a good six or seven or eight of those coming up in the next few weeks. And, you know, we have an active Facebook page. I encourage people to visit that. It's Eric for Hingham. That's Eric with a C. Eric for Hingham is my Facebook page. And we also have a website that has a lot of information about me for folks to learn. That's www.ericforhingham.com. Again, Eric with a C, E-R-I-C, for Hingham.com.
Just, I'm going to kind of circle back around you when we're talking about transparency. And you've talked about, you know, in your push piece here, you talk about wanting to be able to balance anything new that is developed with the historical aspect of the community. But then I also see here that you want to make sure that the integrity of the neighborhoods, Hingham's neighborhoods, that local control is there when it comes to land use. Has this been like a long-running, again, not everybody knows what's going on in Hingham, but this is your opportunity to do, not only inform folks who are listening from Hingham, hello, but also folks in surrounding communities too.
Yeah, certainly. So Hingham, like a lot of other towns in Massachusetts, has worked for the past probably 10 years now with the state 40B law, which has to do with affordable housing. And in some circumstances, it removes from the town the town's ability to enforce its local zoning and its local land use restrictions. This actually gets to what I was speaking about earlier, having to do with long-term planning for the town. Hingham is on the verge of achieving compliance with the state 40B law, which is really a great place for the town to be. I'm proud that Hingham has done its fair share to provide affordable housing to folks on the South Shore. And it puts Hingham in the great position of now being able to reassert and enforce its local zoning and its local land use controls. And as a selectman, that's something that I would seek to do to, as you say, make sure that that any new development in Hingham is balanced against the character of the community and the neighborhoods that would be affected by it. That has to do with streetscape. It has to do with traffic, it has to do with density, it has to do with the impact on the schools. And now that Hingham is in a position to enforce those local land use and zoning controls, I say we ought to do it and put together a plan for what we want our community to look like and how we're going to do it.
A lot of times voters, quality of life can be everything. And you touched upon a lot of quality of life issues that I think when voters go into their polling place, that hopefully it's something that resonates with them, your message or anybody else who may be running for office in and around the South Shore.
Well, you're absolutely right, Kevin. And, you know, you're touching on the reasons that my wife, Annie, and I moved to Hingham was for the quality of life, for the school system, for the kind of community that that has such a robust and rich character as Hingham. And that's what I'm looking to preserve.
The other thing I was gonna quickly ask you is, are there any upcoming forums with the other folks who are running, and are you looking forward to it? Are you anticipating? Because it gives you a chance to size yourself up with some of the other folks who are running and might have platforms that are similar or dissimilar from your views and values.
Yes, Kevin, there are three forums coming up, and let me go through them real quick.
Please
League
do.
Of Women Voters hosting something at Town Hall on April 5th. There's something at the Linden Ponds community on Saturday, April 8th. And then the local Republican Town Committee hosts a forum for all the candidates on Sunday, April 9th. So they're all bunched up together. It's going to be an intense couple of days there. But I am looking forward to those. I'm excited to make my case to the voters, and I'm excited to stand myself up next to the folks who I'm running against and allow voters to see how I'm different and how my values and my platform really fit with Hingham.
Okay. Anything you want to say in closing, whether it's, you know, why people should vote for you or just valuable information in regards to social media and a website?
Again, I'll repeat that we have a great Facebook page. I encourage everybody to take a look at it. It's Eric for Hingham. We have a website, www.ericforhingham.com. Eric is spelled with a C. And, you know, folks ought to feel free to reach out to me directly anytime. My cell phone is 339-200-9297. If you live in Hingham and you want to talk to me about something, give me a buzz. I'd love to hear from you. The polls are open Saturday, April 9th from 8 in the morning until 8 in the evening. If you live in Hingham, come out and vote. If I haven't met you yet, I'm looking forward to it. And let me just close by saying that I'm having a great time doing this, Kevin. The campaign has been a lot of fun. Get to meet so many people and learn so much about the community. It's been a great experience.
Again, like Eric says, get out and vote. April 29th, the polls open 8 a.m. make your decision, and you've had an opportunity to do it, at least here. Two of the candidates, so we thank you. Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Coming in and joining us, we will step aside just for a few moments when we come back. The second hour of Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Peter, it was always Tiny's intention to have a Tiny and Sons business.
That's true, that's true. We always worked well together, but my mom had a lot to do with it. I think she wanted us out of the house. She really needed her peace and quiet.
Five kids, you really can't blame her.
Tiny taught us how to get along and work together. And most important, mother knows best.
Did you learn anything about windshields?
That too, but you really get used to doing a good job. You know Tiny's gonna check it out.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return here to the second hour of Monday Night Talk, and we are anticipating speaking to our next guest. Now, do you know who our next guest is, James? Do you want to share with the fine folks who are listening out there in the radio land?
Oh, yeah. It's the best-selling
author. Speaking of the microphone, so folks know.
Best-selling author, Michelle McPhee.
McPhee. All right. And how many L's in Michelle?
That's one.
All right.
1-0.
Well, you're doing good. Not too bad for a radio intern so far. And you said, actually, you have a story. Did you say that you actually got an autograph or you've met Michelle?
It was a couple years ago. Me and my dad went to an autograph signing, and she was there just selling her books and signing autographs, so we got it.
Now, do you remember what the book was?
I honestly have no idea.
You don't? So, obviously, it's the book that your dad read, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Big reader.
So I look in at Larry, and hopefully we'll have Michelle on the line, just a little bit of a background. I thought it'd be a great idea to have her on. She's got her book should be out for release. I think it's available on Kindle, but we'll find out. We'll check that in a few moments. But her latest book is called Maximum Harm, and the idea of this particular book, we know that. We've had Dave Wedge and Casey Sherman in. We've talked with them about their Boston Strong book. This is a look into the FBI, their investigation, the Zinoff brothers, the trial. From what I understand is that the trial was something that Michelle attended. Now, I believe we have Michelle McPhee on the line. Are you there, Michelle?
Hello, Kevin. It's such a pleasure to be on with you.
I got to say, it's a pleasure to be able to speak with you because I have followed you, your career from the Boston Herald, the time not too long ago when you were up the dial a couple of clicks on the last time we had an FM talk station, WTKK.
I know. Don't you miss those days?
Miss those days because you, Jay Severin, the Boston guy, Joe... all of you guys, it was great.
Well, you know we were big fans of yours too, Kevin.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Well, I'm serious. You're great. You're great at what you do, and you always know what you're talking about. You really have your finger on the pulse. That's why you're really the first radio interview we're doing about the book, because I have such admiration for you.
Well, I appreciate that. I follow you and some of the stuff. I actually tried to listen to your interview earlier, but I was doing show prep. Who did you have on? Who actually was releasing a book?
Sedoya, who's amazing. You'll be able to get it on podcast. I believe what do we use? Podbean or 1510 WMAX. She was one of the 17 amputees that day, and the firefighter who took care of her, who I know, Mike Materia. They're engaged. They're going to get married. They fell in love. It's actually a really inspirational story.
Talk to us about your career as a journalist. What got you in from being an investigative reporter to saying, you know what, I want to be an author, and some of the stuff that you've been able to do too, right up to your newest book, which is going to be launching when?
Next Tuesday is the big launch.
Yeah, hey, it's going to be like a big party.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually having a book release party because this, you know, there were so many people that helped me that couldn't be named in the book because it's such a undertaking of, you know, a lot of classified information and a lot of documentation, and I really needed a lot of help from law enforcement, but a lot of those people obviously were not authorized to talk, so I had to find a way to say thank you to those people. So I am having a party at Smith & Lewinsky's in Atlantic Wharf, which is down by the seaport, just to say thank you to those people who can't be named, just to say thank you to all the people who were in the book, all the heroes. So it'll be a good time.
What made you want to do a book about the Zinoff brothers? What's the nickname you got for Joe Hart? You got a nickname for him?
Flashbang and Speed Bump, yeah.
What made you want to do it? What compelled you to say, I need to delve into this book and kind of tell the story?
Well, first of all, look, it just didn't ring true from the very beginning. I've been a reporter for a very long time. Yep. If I interviewed you 2 years ago, Kevin, and it was a big story, I certainly would remember you if your face then emerged as a suspect in the Boston Marathon attack.
Right.
So right away, it stunk to high heaven when the FBI is like, we didn't even recognize him. Oh, really? Well, what about the multi-billion-dollar facial recognition program that the federal taxpayers paid for? He had a mugshot. It was just right away. You know, I've covered organized crime for a long time. Yep. I've written, this is my sixth book. Two of my books are about organized crime. I just smelled a rat, quite literally. This had all the makings of a federal informant. And it struck me right away that their story was kind of garbage. And then it got worse when Sean Collier got killed. And you find out in Chapter 1 of Maximum Harm, the FBI was all over Cambridge in the hours before MIT police officer Sean Collier was executed in cold blood on MIT campus.
Did you face, you know, doing some background work here, I didn't realize how dangerous it has been for you to be able to write books with, you know, mobsters pointing guns in your face, or, you know, you having to sneak into a wake, or even being chased by a killer around Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one thing I will say. I'm usually not afraid because the people who would threaten you are never the ones who do it.
Right.
I will say this, though, Kevin, if you find me mysteriously suicidal, I'm definitely not in any danger of taking my own life. So if there's some sort of Arkansas-related death in my future, just remember, I said on the record, it's unlikely any of my crazy exes are going to whack me, and I'm definitely not suicidal, so it was probably the feds.
What do you feel is going to come out in this particular book? Do you feel that there's going to be any retribution that people are going to say,
no.
Hey, no?
I think that real law enforcement, who in every day there are FBI agents and DEA agents and ATF agents and HSI, there are so many federal agents out there that do their job every day. The people who, the crux of Maximum Harm is that Whitey Bulger and Sam Lins and I have shared a lot in common. Whitey Bulger and Sam Lins and I were both secretly working for federal agencies. And if you look at Sam Lins, this is not a theory. This isn't, you know, a tinfoil hat conspiracy. This is 3.5 years of culling through 10,000 pages of court transcripts, going to every single solitary court appearance for Zinoff, for every one of the four co-defendants in that case. I really dived into this, and there were unanswered questions that are obvious. For example, the federal government said that the Zinoff did not build the bomb. The obvious retort is, then who did, and why aren't you looking for them? Well, there's a chapter in the book that deals with the guy who really likely built the bomb. There's, why did Catherine Russell get a free pass when Omar Mateen, the Pulse nightclub shooter, did not? Catherine Russell seems to know and do a lot more than Nadia Sahir, Omar Mateen's wife. So there are a lot of those unanswered questions. Then you ask the question, why was the FBI all over Tamlin's and I's neighborhood before Sean Collier was killed?
Right.
Who robbed the 7-Eleven? But the biggest question for me came with his A-file, with his immigration records. And that's why it's such a timely book, because if you look at vetting, you look at refugee status. Do you remember Uncle Ruslan? who came out and said, my nephew's a loser. He lived in Maryland shortly after the bombing.
Yep.
Well, that guy's father was a very powerful CIA officer. And in 2002, he was the CIA station chief in Ankara, Turkey. Well, Ankara, Turkey, just coincidentally or not, just happened to be where the Zanaya family came from. They have a bunch of Russians who made their way to the U.S., got political asylum via Ankara, Turkey. And what a helpful thing that, you know, Anzor, the patriarch's brother, just happened to live in Graham Fuller's house. And you look at who owns the house in Cambridge. It was a Russian defector named Alexander Lipsit. So the family gets in with the help of Uncle Ruslan. They get immediately into a Section 8 house owned by a former KGB agent who was then working for the U.S., who was Graham Fuller's Russian teacher. There just seems to be way too many coincidences, Kevin, for this to all make sense. But what we do know is that Pamela Zanayev was on two terror watch lists when he left the United States in January of 2012. He came back 6.5 months later, still on multiple terror watch lists, and he had absolutely no problem whatsoever breezing through customs. Weeks later, the citizenship that he was not eligible for was mysteriously reopened and fast-tracked. Weeks before the marathon bombing, he went to the federal building, tried to get his citizenship, and that went wrong, and April 15th happened a short time later.
You take a look at what's going on under the Trump administration, and every time we turn around, there's a news story. We hear more about the Russians. We hear more about what's the latest we're hearing now? That supposedly that Donald Trump's during the transition, that, you know, members of his administration were being wiretapped. That, you know, do you not fear that looking down the road that yet there's going to be another instance that we have someone who comes into the country to, you know, harm our citizens?
Just this week, there was an Uber driver who drove a school bus for the Malden school system who was wanted for a variety of human atrocities in his native Haiti. He had been the mayor of Haiti, and last week they locked him up because he was wanted for war crimes. Anyone who vetted him could have done a Google search and saw that he was wanted in Haiti.
Google was your friend.
Somehow he comes to Massachusetts. He immediately gets a Social Security card, he gets a Massachusetts driver's license, and he gets a job as a bus driver for the Malden school system.
Oh, my God.
He's also driving Uber on the side. This is not unusual. I wrote a story for Boston Magazine 2 years ago about Beatrice Munyenyenzi. She was a Rwandan genocidaire who slaughtered with her own hands Tutsis during the Rwandan genocide, and whose husband owned, quite literally, a hotel of horrors there, where women were raped, nuns were murdered, little boys were slaughtered. There are at least 7 war criminals who have been found hiding out in Massachusetts in the last 5 years.
Are we just an aloof society? I mean, we say that we want to be, you know, keep our citizens safe, but yet, you know, you cite instances like this that, you know, people are hiding out here and able to work for a school system. You would think that there'd be some kind of proper vetting or a Corey check done.
Here's the problem. He doesn't have a record here, so nothing comes up.
Right.
He is literally a war criminal in Haiti. Wanted, desperately being sought after. But then he comes here and he's Joe Blow, refugee, with a Massachusetts driver's license, a Social Security card, and all the mechanisms to just reinvent himself with the help of the U.S. government so he can evade any sort of capture in his native country, where he literally murdered people who didn't vote for him.
It's crazy. I have to ask you this. This being your sixth book, was this any... How much more difficult was this particular book compared to the other 5? And you know, or do you have kind of like a cadence now? You know, from your first book, there's a lot of learning, but then after a while, you have a little bit of an outline as to how you go about putting together a book.
You know, that's a really good question. I think on my previous books, I was under a very hard and fast deadline, and I didn't have the luxury like I did here of a 3-year investigation. You know, my book, A Date with Death, it turned into the Lifetime movie Craigslist Killer.
Right.
Well, that I had a 3-month deadline on that. There's only so much you can do in 3 months, especially when the trials hadn't happened yet, the case wasn't adjudicated. Of course, he took his own life and saved us all a bunch of money. I was happy about that. But this is different. I always said, Kevin, if I ever get rich, I'm going to donate a suicide room to the DOC. If you want to take your own life, instead of paying some CO to sit with you around the clock, have at it. Go into the little rubber, you know, coated room and do whatever you want. But I digress.
Well, it's,
we spend so much money. We don't protect our returning veterans from suicide, but some perps, killers, lowlifes, rapists, losers, yeah, they all get 24-hour protection from killing themselves.
It's definitely crazy. And you talk about, you know, as far as making money, one of these excerpts, and you can tell me if this is true or not. From what I understand, a portion of the book sales are actually going to be donated to the Martin Richard Foundation.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
And, yep. From the start, when I first got the advance on, we are. And we're being quiet about it. You know, my agent put that in there. I've asked her not to ever say that again, but we are doing it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to mention it.
I know. That's okay. No. Listen, I will never forget the testimony about how that little boy died. And it's haunting. And it's one of the reasons why I truly believe that there should be cameras in federal courtrooms. Because if we had cameras in federal courtrooms, there's not one person in this country that could be against what Donald Trump is trying to do by making sure we don't get others than I have family. We don't get other people like this. And anyone who is against vetting, I'm not talking about a ban of anybody. Right. That's ridiculous. So you can't ban people. There are countless brave Muslims who are working in undercover capacities for us all over this country that have uncovered plots. That's not what I'm saying. But certainly anyone who's against vetting, look at the Haitian mayor who murdered all of his constituents. Let's look at the Bosnian warlord hanging out with his victims' families in Peabody, Mass. Or the El Salvadoran general who ordered the slaughter of 6 Jesuit priests in El Salvador. The list goes on and on. All of these people found right here in Massachusetts. Why would anyone want to live next door to those monsters? I know I don't.
I wouldn't want to.
I mean, I woke up Christmas morning to a dead body behind my house in East Boston. MS-13 gangbanger who kills another MS-13 gangbanger, one of 6 teenagers here illegally who were murdered in East Boston last year alone. I mean, this is what people are not looking at. There's the only people getting deported right now are the ones who are violent. And all of these protests against that is just, to me, it's unfathomable.
Are you concerned with how things have gone so far under the Trump administration in regards to his attempt to at least make sure that if anybody does come into our country, they are properly vetted and that, you know, that we keep our borders safe?
Well, listen, I have a lot of confidence in General John Kelly, the new Department of Homeland Security Secretary. Right. He has a guy from Boston, by the way, who is very rational, very reasonable, and it's already proven to be a big improvement over Jay Johnson, the former secretary, who was a corporate lawyer who just happened to drop off a bag of cash to the DNC right before he became the DHS secretary. I mean, there's a big difference. Corporate lawyer with no experience whatsoever in law enforcement, or a general who worked in the Southern Command. Who knows everything there is about border security. I think I'm going to put my faith in General John Kelly.
But this has to be giving. This must be giving you a ton of material for the drive time show that you do on MEX. I mean, it's nonstop these days.
It really is nonstop. I mean, look, is Donald Trump making some mistakes? Of course. But I think the unrelenting criticism, constant criticism, is not helpful to anyone in this nation. And this vow to fight everything he does, it just makes you think, well, what exactly is the Massachusetts delegation doing for us? I look at a guy like Congressman Joe Kennedy, and I see him saying, hold on a minute. This Paul Ryan bill cuts out all mental health and substance abuse funding. We can't have that. I completely agree with Joe Kennedy, but at least the guy read the bill, researched the bill, and got people to answer questions. Everyone else is just a professional obstructionist with no facts whatsoever. And I have a lot of respect for people who are still trying to work for Massachusetts. Remember, back in the day, Ted Kennedy and Orrin Hatch were best friends.
Right.
And Ted Kennedy got stuff done for Massachusetts. It couldn't be more different.
Well, being one of the
I'm sick and tired of the people that are representing us right now for doing absolutely nothing.
Well, I want to ask you, as probably one of the hardest working journalists and radio show hosts around, what do you think in regards to the information, the fake news that we see day in and day out when it comes to certain issues. And you, who knows what to believe these days?
Well, listen, I just know that I wouldn't participate in any of it. I am somebody who believes in the old days of Watergate. Follow the money, get to the truth. You know, there should be investigative reporting on everybody. Mike Flynn took money, he should get locked up.
Right.
If there were secret meetings with Russians and the Russians got something out of it, prove it. Period. Let's deal with facts instead of conjecture all the time, and I'm totally content with that.
But do you feel that media outlets do enough investigative
I don't think there's any enterprise reporting anymore. Everybody just repeats. So Nancy Pelosi will go to her favorite reporter at Politico and say, can you believe Mike Flynn had a conversation with the Russian ambassador? And a reporter doesn't enterprise that out or doesn't kick in doors and pound the pavement. People are just very content to just rewrite whatever their source is saying rather than really dig in and investigate. Listen, my sources were saying to me from the beginning, Tamlin Ganaev was a rat. He was an informant.
Right.
I had to spend 3.5 years to prove that. I believed them, but I wanted to set up a roadmap. And if you read Maximum Harm, every single solitary piece of information in this book is annotated. It is documented. It's a 364-page book. 64 pages are simply annotations. This is where I got that. This is the document where that appeared.
Right.
This is the interview I conducted. There's nothing in there that is not substantiated with paperwork, interviews, court records, police reports. It's all facts. And using those facts, I proved what these cops suspected on the night that Sean Collier was killed. There's something stinky about what the FBI knew about Tamlin's and Ive, and then they worked really hard to cover it up. I mean, let's think about this, Kevin. Right after the marathon, Janet Napolitano, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary at the time, before Jay Johnson, before John Kelly, quit. The head of the FBI, Bob Mueller, who gave us Whitey, he quit. The head of the Boston FBI, Dick Dolores, he quit. Even Jerry Leone, the Middlesex County DA, who was in charge of the Waltham triple murder on 9/11/11, he quit. So right there, all the following bodies in April 2013 is kind of suspicious, and you go, huh, why did every Homeland Security official who would have had knowledge of Tamlin Ganaev's cooperation deal quit?
Do you think there'll ever be an investigation, an inside investigation of the FBI?
I really believe that if Congressman Bill Keating, who is a well-respected prosecutor, and I happen to be one of the people that respect him,
mm-hmm.
Remember, Bill Keating went to Russia with Steven Seagal, the action hero.
Right.
Remember this? Bill Keating, along with a bipartisan delegation of congressional investigators, had to have Steven Seagal escort them to Russia because the FBI was so uncooperative that the Russian FSB, the KGB, essentially, was more cooperative, Bill Keating said on the record, than the FBI. I mean, what kind of country do we live in where the FBI refuses to cooperate with Congress over and over and over again?
The government is broken, Michelle.
Who watches the Watchers? That's what I want to know.
Who is watching the Watchers? Folks who are just tuning in, we are speaking with best-selling author Michelle McPhee. Michelle with one L. Go to her website, michellemcphee.com. You can pre-order Maximum Harm, which is due out next week. Now, I thought I heard you today on your radio show say something about that this book is available on Kindle, or it will be?
It's available on Kindle, so people are posting reviews, which is very kind.
Ah.
And the reviews are all very positive, which I appreciate. So, you know, there's only a handful of people who actually have the physical copy of the book.
Okay.
Right now, but people have been able to download it on Kindle already. It's available at Barnes & Noble. And on the Amazon authors page, you can look up Michelle R. McPhee, and there's a list. I'm doing signings all over Massachusetts, all spring long. So almost every day in April, I'll be at a place where you can come out. You can ask me any question you want about the book.
Yep.
I'll be happy to answer them. Listen, the biggest thing that people ask me is, what kind of pushback are you going to get? I'm ready. And I have my facts in order, and it's very hard to argue with somebody who actually takes the time to develop all the circumstances and all the facts.
Has anybody approached you about maybe making this into a movie? Is there anything that you're working on, or do you want to get the book out there first, and we'll talk about that afterwards?
Well, I'm actually, as a matter of fact, flying to L.A. on Thursday
Look
for a
you.
Meeting with some people.
Okay.
want to develop this into a film or into a series like Homeland.
Oh, wow, that would be interesting.
But, I mean, think about it. If anyone watches Homeland, which I love, but this season, Homeland is all about a Muslim informant and corruption in the CIA, FBI. How ironic.
Now, let's say if you were somehow featured in the movie, let's just say, right? Who would you want to play?
Yes. Ooh, that's a good question. You know who I love is Drea DeMarco. She's in that Shades of Blue right now. She was in The Sopranos.
Oh. I can see
She's kind of a rough and tumble Italian girl.
I can see it. I definitely can see it.
As long as Kevin Bacon doesn't play the FBI head. Oh, that made me disgusted.
But then you'd be part of the 6 degrees.
I know, wouldn't that be... You're absolutely right. Good point. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
All right.
Very well said.
Hold on now. I'm going to see. I can't see that, Larry. Oh, okay. Billy from Braintree is helping Michelle to sell the book. Okay. Do you know who Billy is from Braintree?
Oh, boy. I wonder if it... Okay, hopefully this is not Billy the Basement Dweller, but let's see.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. I'll know immediately.
Okay. Well, I know myself. I will make sure that I get a book. I will see if... Now, do you know off the top of your head anything here on the South Shore that you're going to be doing in regards to selling the book?
You know what? That's funny because somebody just tweeted at me today, where's the love for the South Shore? So I am going to reach out to the Braintree Barnes & Nobles. And if any, I know I'm going to be at the Falmouth Museum. I know that's a little too far south.
It's in the neighborhood.
It's in the hood. But Falmouth Museum is April 7th.
Okay.
At 7 o'clock.
All right. Well, I definitely would like to get... I'll buy a book. I will seek you out to get it signed somehow. And we'll continue.
You're of course coming to the party.
Well, it depends on when it is, dear.
April 4th, Smith and Lewinsky's, next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. So I just got an open invitation to come to the party.
Yes, you definitely did. You're on the list. I already put you on the list.
You are the best. And I follow you on Instagram. You do a great job. Love the pictures you post. And I want to thank you again for joining us and would love to have more
conversations.
Would love to have more conversations, even if it's just to kind of talk about some of the stuff that you rant and rave about from 3 to 7 p.m. on WMEX.
Absolutely. And Kevin, thank you. I'm a big fan. I appreciate the time.
Have yourself a great evening, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
There you go. There she is, Michelle McPhee. That wasn't too bad. What did you think, Jim?
I know, pretty good.
All right. Jim, all kinds of words from James. Listen, coming up, we're going to speak with our friends. We're going to close out the show talking about how we can help our friends, our four-legged friends, and more. Here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Over the past, 10 years, Brennan's Smoke Shop's customers have given thousands of dollars in spare change to our local charity, the Nathan Hale Foundation. That money has been used for the Nathan Hale Veterans Outreach Center and Three Hearts Farm Veterans Growing Opportunities.
Hello, a tip cup in a smoke shop?
No way, it's not a tip cup. It's our cigar box charity bin. Brennan's customers, I repeat, Brennan's customers have donated thousands of dollars to the Nathan Hale Foundation, a registered 501c3 located in Plymouth and Middleborough. I'd like to thank all of our great and loyal customers for giving so much to this great and worthy charity. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping us help our local veterans. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and coming soon, at some point, to Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Well, thank you for staying with us for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And those who listen to this radio program, I like to use the analogy that this program, it's a magazine-esque show. It's not a full-on political program. We don't just, do featurey stuff. I kind of look at it as like a meal. And that is that, you know, when we open the program, the first couple of moments, we kind of, it's the menu. What's going on? Now, that's not to say that the next couple of segments are appetizers, but anybody who enjoys something like a seven-course meal, you get an opportunity to try a couple of different things. The beginning, the first hour, usually we do a lot of politics, local issues, and then we segue into feature or community events or items that are going on. And so right about now, this being the final segment, this is kind of like the dessert portion of the program. Although there's a lot of meat to get to here, and we've got two great friends who are here on a regular basis. So we have Chuck Giovannetti, and we have Michelle McKenzie, and I can't forget the star of the show, of course. We have Dory, who is here in studio. She'll be kind of the silent partner. And we're here to talk about our favorite thing. And what is that, Chuck?
The Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Massachusetts.
And where is this located for folks who don't know?
We're located in Brockton on 1300 West Elm Street Extension. We're on the west side of the city, right on the Eastern Line.
And your title and position, again, are you like the president of the board? Or?
Yeah, I'm a volunteer with the organization first, but I am the president of the board of directors.
And Michelle, again, welcome back.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always great to see you.
Always great to see you, and it's great to have my friends from the AP, the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, to talk about the importance of this organization. Doesn't necessarily just serve, you know, the cat lovers, the dog lovers. There are all kinds of animals that are at the center. And we usually like to have you guys, and just to remind the folks the importance of protecting a nonprofit organization like yours, and also to promote upcoming events. And I think that's kind of the idea here. We're going to talk a little bit about the 8th annual Tails and Ties Gala. This is going to be at the Shaw Center in Brockton, coming up on April 22nd from 6 to 10 p.m. Usually a fantastic event. I've already been told that I will be attending. And this is not coming from my direct boss, but this is coming from a former boss. So I'm going to be looking forward to attending this event. Give us the idea, guys, about the this particular event and its importance.
Well, Kevin, this is our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's a silent auction. It's a seated dinner. We gave it a fancy name, but it's as fancy as you want to be. And it's a wine and beer tasting. We have local vendors who donate goods, and you can sample a wide variety of things. There's chocolates. There's great auction items. It's just a lot of fun, and it brings together our community, and it allows us to say thank you to everybody, because we are, all of our funds that we operate on are donations. And you know, we're not getting government money. We're not getting a lot of grants at this point. So it's all donations, and it's really a chance to thank our supporters and our volunteers, because other than the six staff that we mm-hmm. have, it's completely operated by volunteers, and the time and effort that they put in is really clear when you visit the shelter.
I guess I would ask you, Chuck, I mean, what are some of the things that go on over at the center?
We are an adoption center, obviously. Dogs, cats, as you mentioned. You were kind enough to mention a number of other animals.
Absolutely.
If you were to check out our Facebook page last night and today, you'll see that there's a cute little chinchilla that's up for adoption. So folks don't think about small animals all the time, but rabbits, ferrets we'll have occasionally, birds. So adoption is one of our primary functions is putting a homeless pet in a forever home. We are a service to the community, though, as well. Coming up at the in April, near the end of April, and I unfortunately don't have the date.
It's the 30th?
Yep, April 30th.
Thank you. It's right in front of me here. Mm. Is our spay and neuter clinic coming up.
Low cost spay and neuter.
Correct.
Yep, $10 for a rabies shot.
How do you beat that?
You don't. And it keeps your animal safe. And it's also the chance to get your pet microchipped if you wish. Mm. And that is one of the ways. There was recently a report out that more and more shelters, or fewer animals, are dying in shelters. And that's one of the reasons.
Fantastic.
The spay and neuter, so there are less strays out there, and the microchips, more animals are being reunited with their people. And, you know, we recently in Easton, a dog had gotten away during a walk. It was one of the dogs that participates in one of our extracurricular activities, our agility class. And we put it on our Facebook page, and it got more than 400 shares in the 24 plus hours that she was gone. But
fantastic.
She was reunited, and hopefully the chip had something to do with it. But on the off chance that your animal does get away, and the low-cost clinic, you really can't beat it.
I was going to augment what Michelle was saying, that it is low cost, and to the fact that if you would go to your local vet, nothing against them, but there's a fee just walking in to visit a local vet that you might have a relationship with. This is a great opportunity, and usually this in the spring, many of the, I know Brockton is the annual renewal of dog licenses, but many of the towns and cities around start that and require for your licensing to... your licensing fee is less if your dog is spayed or neutered as well, and you need to have that rabies shot in order to get your license. So it's a great opportunity to stay up on the shots and to get stay within laws.
Now, the APCSM usually is, while you're a standalone organization, you're still someone who works well within the community. Working with other shelters too, right?
Yes. On occasion, we will accept an animal. We recently did accept an animal. I'd mentioned the chinchilla before, which is an odd story. Was in another shelter, not getting the focus that was needed. Has been placed with us for finding a home. We've had some great success in finding homes for small animals like that. But on occasion, we'll have a cat or a dog that's been with us and just not getting the right visitation, doesn't find the right family, it's not the right match, and we'll move them and work with another facility as well.
Let's be honest. All animals, all life, there's usually a behavior. There's usually, you know what, I mean, I have a dog, you know what I mean? And that dog is vital to our family. It's a member of the family. It fits in, and it has its own attitude. It has its own, you know, behavioral patterns. But it's, you know what, again, it's a life. And again, like I said, it's a member of the family. And we've had, myself and my missus, we've had times where the dog has gone off, you know, for a couple of days, and we're like, we're kind of missing that damn dog, you know? And it's, again, whether it's a dog or a cat or a box turtle, it doesn't matter. The idea is it's a life, and it's, you know, it can quickly become a part of your family. Talk to us a little bit about Tricia. From what I understand, that Tricia is more than just somebody who oversees the shelter.
She's our shelter manager. She's been with us for about a year and a half now.
That is correct.
And she also is a trainer. A dog trainer. So in addition to managing the shelter, which she's done fabulous, we've been so lucky to have her. She is able to work a bit with some of the dogs that come in. We'll get a lot of big dogs, as you can imagine, in the city. And, you know, sometimes we'll get young dogs. And like you said, every dog has a personality, and young male dogs, especially females as well, but males, not picking on you guys. I'm in a room with males. They can be a little bit boisterous, and sometimes when you walk into a shelter, the dogs are in stressful situations. They're in places they don't understand why they're there. They're in smaller areas than they're accustomed to, and sometimes they're bouncing, or they're loud, and they're noisy, and they're, you know, they're just crazy, and that's not the best way to get a dog adopted. So to be able to calm a dog, to be able to teach it basic, you know, sit, if not stay, but, you know, sit, paw kind of thing, you can make the dog more presentable, more adoptable. You can get an idea for what kind of family, get a good fit. So occasionally with shelters, all shelters, a dog will be adopted, and you get home and you realize the dog is not the right fit for this situation. We're better able to kind of gauge what kind of situation the dog should be in, that kind of thing. And she's able to work with staff as well, so everybody has, you know, more of awareness of the animal's personality and their behaviors and things like that. So we've just we've really been able to do a good job of making harder to adopt animals adoptable, and we appreciate her and her leadership in that so greatly.
Talk to us. Chuck, did you want to weigh in on that?
I was going to add in.
Please do.
Michelle is doing a great job speaking of what Tricia does with training, but the idea of making a pet, or not making a pet, but having a pet become comfortable, sometimes the shelter setting as clean and as loving and as friendly as it is with the staff and the volunteers is not always the right environment for a new pet.
Right.
We have a nice team of people that, volunteers that will foster a dog with their family. Beth comes to mind, that is one of our volunteers and is always with accepting to take on a dog to bring into her home with her pets. And what works out is after several weeks, that dog becomes comfortable, understands what it's like to be in a family or a environment that's structured, and becomes a great pet for adoption.
And we've been talking about dogs, but we also have a network of people who take cats. And with spring coming, stray cats, we just get so many cats and kittens starting in approximately May, mm-hmm. and then through May and June. We have foster families that take pregnant cats and, you know, have them through the birth of the kittens. The kittens stay with their mother before the whole crew of them comes back to be adopted. And we currently have one cat coming in this weekend who just raised her litter to the point where they can be separated from their mother, and now the mother will be adopted. The kittens usually go pretty quickly. Sometimes, you know, the older cats or the mothers are a little overlooked, but we wouldn't be able to be as successful as we are without all of these volunteers and the great leadership of our staff.
Well, both of you are volunteers. I got to say is that you guys are a fantastic team as well, which has led to the success of segments like this, to be able to kind of share with folks what the mission is of the Animal Protection Center of the Southeast of Mass, located in Brockton, and some of the things that you guys do, some of the things that are offered. And again, yeah, we kind of sit here and talk about dogs and talk about cats, but again, there are so many other animals that you guys will take. You basically don't really say no unless you don't have space for a larger animal, whatever it may be, so to speak.
Yeah, horses are kind of, we have to draw the line at farm animals. We refer them to Nevin's Farm.
I didn't want to say a specific animal just in case, but I was thinking horse.
I'll share a story with you real quick that happened earlier this week through a realtor that I know through some other business said to us that, gave me a shout and said he has a client that's looking for an apartment and has a pet raccoon that he's raised from a baby and everything shots, but he can't find somebody to rent to him because it's a raccoon. Is there something we could help out with in taking, et cetera? Well, we're not equipped for that. Mm. But right away, we were able to reference him to other organizations that were able to point him, hopefully, in the right direction.
And again, at that point where it's been raised from infancy to being larger, you can't just release it into the wild. It's already, you know, kind of, it's at that point in life that it basically should have somebody who is a caretaker for it.
Well, it would work well into a zoo or a habitat that control, you know, is a learning organization that can take care of them.
Absolutely. And again, life is precious, and it kind of odd. That's kind of my segue, because you guys have a special fund, do you not?
We do. That was very smooth, Kevin. You must be a professional.
I have my moments.
Our Life is Precious Fund is a fund we have at the shelter. It's separate from our general operating fund, and the donations to that go specifically to unexpected medical costs for the animals that come in. And sometimes we'll be doing a routine medical exam of an animal that is surrendered to us, and we'll find an underlying condition or something that just wasn't expected, or we'll find like rotting teeth that can lead to a whole host of other health issues. And they need special medical attention above and beyond the spay neuter, the, you know, regular checkup, the basic dental cleaning. And this fund covers those costs. We work with a couple of local vets that provide reduced care, or reduced cost care, I should say. Their care is just outstanding. But there are costs associated with it, and some animals require extra medication if they need medicine for diabetes or some other situation. It's covered by the donations from this particular fund.
Again, we're speaking with Michelle McKenzie and Chuck Giovannetti there with the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Massachusetts, located in Brockton, but they serve the greater Brockton area. And we're just kind of giving an idea as to, you know, what it is that they do. And we're also taking an opportunity to promote one of their great upcoming events, the 8th Annual Silent Auction and Gala. This is the Tales and Ties Gala. It'll be in Brockton April 22nd at the Shaw Center. And it's a great chance. If you like to dance, it's a great venue to go and have a great time. Silent Auction. A wine and beer tasting. They're going to have chocolates. I believe there's going to be a chocolate fountain there. I think we should probably take our remaining 10 minutes to kind of talk about maybe some of the stuff that will be up for grabs during the silent auction. Do we want to do that and just kind of entice folks a little further, other than just showing up and having a great night out?
Thank you, Kevin. Sure. It is a lot of fun. You mentioned the dining, the dancing, the chocolate tasting, beer, wine. There'll even be some bourbon tasting.
Ooh, what? No, wait. Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't see that here.
Our friends at the Wine Basket, he's bringing over some bourbons for taste as
very
well.
Nice.
Which will be great. But there's some great prizes up for auction. Tickets for Red Sox and Patriots game. There's a Canyon Ranch Spa package that's up for auction as well. There's concerts to U2's Joshua Tree Tour at Gillette. Also, New Kids on the Block Tour.
NKTOB, really?
You know.
For those of us that need to go back in time a little bit.
You got
bit.
The right stuff, baby.
One of our very popular items, some of your listeners will may understand this, is the tickets to see Ellen. The Ellen DeGeneres show with
very popular, yeah,
very popular with the airfare out to California and back.
Wow, that's fantastic!
So that's one of our big items out there too. And there's a number of jewelry items on sale. Trip to New York City for two nights. So there's some great things up for auction,
sure.
And there's some great prizes that can be won in raffles, as well as the balloon pop game, which is always a lot of fun, as crazy as that might sound.
Yeah, according to my notes here, is that this interesting balloon toss, I can guarantee that you might get a prize that's worth at least the cost of your ticket.
Yeah, you get a ticket, you get a number, and you get a dart, and you throw the dart till you pop a balloon. And the prizes that are in the balloon, there's a grand prize in one of the balloons, but all the other prizes are at least the cost of the admission ticket. And people go crazy for that. It's so much fun. And it usually sells out, and you have a line through the Shaw Center, people waiting to throw their dart and get their balloon. So it's really something to see.
But they would have to purchase a game ticket in order to be able to participate in this, right?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, because it's a limited number of balloons on each board. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, some of the prizes that we've given out in the past have been some gift certificates to local restaurants and gas cards.
And there's a grand prize on each of the balloon boards, and it's usually the value of it is between $500 and $1,000.
Right.
A couple of other little things here that I kind of bullet pointed myself here. Tickets for, these are for auction item things, I believe. Mm-hmm. Tickets for the Red Sox. Hopefully they're going to be decent this year, seeing that they're, even though their pitching staff is already experiencing issues, especially with their starting rotation. I mean, I know they picked up Chris Sale, but how can you go wrong with Patriots tickets?
I know. It's going to be a big season next season with all the offseason moves they've made with raising the flag in the first game of the year. So, yeah, you never go wrong with Patriots tickets.
And she would know, being a former sports writer herself.
Former sports writer and a season ticket holder. So, you know, it's pretty good gig.
So, again, if you're looking for items, I know folks sometimes, that they may not go for the dinner, they may not go for the dancing, but I know some folks who, they're really about going to the auctions and finding those little hidden gems, and if they can outbid the next person by, you know, $5 and, you know, be able to score something for either their mantle or, you know, I think Chuck had mentioned about, you know, popular gift cards to local restaurants. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get an opportunity to try a new restaurant, and it's cost effective, you know, depending on your bidding.
It absolutely is. And the other thing to mention too is that anything paid over the, there's a valuation. So, you know, there's a chance that different, if you win an item or something, part of that will be tax deductible. Hmm. And there are, you know, there are different ways to make tax deductible donations as well.
Yeah, talk to me about that. Let's say if there are folks who want to make donations outside of this particular event, I'm sure that that's something that you all, that's also welcomed, correct?
Oh, of course. Like I said, that's what keeps us going day in and day out is the donations. And it's easy to do through our website, which is apcsm.org. And you have the choice there if you wanted to make the donation to the Life is Precious Fund. But any donations to the shelter are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. So we are a 501c3. So if you were donating cash, you would be able to deduct the value of that donation. If you were going to donate goods, it's like, you know, giving to Goodwill or another donation organization, you would be able to make a deduction. We give you a receipt if you ask for that. And there are always things we need, like bleach or kitty litter or your old towels, newspapers. We take returnable cans and bottles. You know, we do everything.
All right. So we just got a couple of minutes left here in our program here on Monday Night Talk. We thank you very much for staying with us to this point as we speak with Michelle and Chuck from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Massachusetts, and talking with them not only about the operations of the center itself, but their upcoming event. We got a couple of minutes left here. Is there any nugget that we have not had a chance to turn over or share with our audience that you feel is kind of important?
Well, as you were talking earlier, something in my little brain here clicked, and if I may just take a moment.
Yes.
With Easter coming, you mentioned all the animals that we get. After Easter, we will sometimes get a lot of rabbits because people decide that rabbits are a great gift to go in an Easter basket without necessarily realizing that there's a lot of work involved in raising the rabbit after the first few delights of having
right.
this beautiful, furry, lovable creature. There's also some work involved. So we would suggest that people think on buying rabbits for their children for Easter. Give it a lot of thought before you do it, because we, at one point last year, I think we had a dozen or more rabbits in our shelter. Thankfully, we worked with the Animal Rescue League to send a lot of those rabbits to them, and they got them adopted. But rabbits and chicks, live pets, are not always the best gift, especially for small children, when you realize that there is work involved with it. Other than that, I'll get off my little pulpit there.
No. I totally agree with you. With the simple fact is, a lot of days, I know a lot of people who make impulsive buys. They think it's a great idea at the time.
Yep.
Until they get the particular animal home, and they go, wait, what do I do beyond this?
Yeah.
You know, you got to be smart. And again, you're talking about a life. It's beyond just, you know, what you do. But, you know, again, you have to take care of that animal. That any animal didn't ask you to purchase it. And you should be fair enough to make sure that you give it a good home so that it also can enjoy a fruitful life as well.
Kevin, one of our policies when adopting an animal is the family is involved. So it is whom comes in. If you're interested, we want to meet everybody in the family and make sure everybody's on board and understands this. So that's where the adoption counselors come in and really can understand, what are you looking for in a pet? Why do you want this pet? What are you going to do? How are you going to take care of him or her? So it is an event that has to take place with the family.
Amen. I couldn't agree more that it, you know, everybody should be involved. And again, you know, if you have kids, and you know, not everybody's kids are well behaved, and you don't know how adding a pet to the mix, you know, is going to, how it's going to go. And the last thing you want to do is just adopt a pet, and then you're rethinking that adoption, you know, a couple of months later because the kids and the dogs don't get along, or the kids are just frightening the heck out of the particular pet. You don't want that to happen. It's, yeah, it's just something to keep in mind. Is there, and if you want to quickly touch upon it, in regards to adoption and some of the animals that you guys will put out there for adoption, if you could do just share the details, how folks who are interested in adopting any pet.
Well, first of all, everybody is always welcome to come and just visit the shelter and see it. If you want to come and hold bunnies for Easter, you are welcome. We're not open on Easter, but you're welcome to come Saturday or the following Tuesday. We will have bunnies for you to hold.
Take a picture with the bunny.
Exactly. But just visit the shelter and see it and see, you know, what we do, what goes into it, the different animals, the level of cleanliness and care. I when I was there a few weeks ago, I walked into the dog room just to take a stroll through, and one of the volunteers was laying on the floor of one of the kennels with one of the dogs that was having some issues, and he just laid there with that dog for 15 or 20 minutes. But meet the people. Chuck and I are both involved with the shelter because of the way we were treated and the animals we got when we came there looking for our pets to adopt. And I've been involved with it for more than 20 years, and you know, you've been almost as long.
Yeah. It's a good organization, and we welcome the donations. As Michelle mentioned, that's what we strive live on and exist. We welcome people to come and see where they're donation is going. It's put to good use.
Yeah, and all the animals we have are on the website, which is apcsm.org.
Wow, it's almost like she has done this before, because that was going to be our closing note. If folks want to find out more information, whether it's about the upcoming event on April 22nd or more about the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, I want to thank both of you for coming in and being part of the program this evening.
And we thank you, Kevin, for having us.
Thank you very much.
And we want to thank Dory. Thank you. Dory did a great job in kind of just hanging out. And we want to thank you for tuning in to Monday Night Talk. If you've missed any of our segments, it's as easy as just going on to the WATD website, 959WATD.com. Scroll down, you can click on the Monday Night Talk banner, and all of our, I want to say we've probably got almost 900 podcasts that are up since I took over this microphone on Monday Night Talk. So until next time, which will be next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.